the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do. Florida.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, welcome. It's the world's greatest podcast with the legend that is Seth Greenberg, ACC Coach of the Year. How many times? Two or three? What did you do?
Two times. What the
two
hell?
Times?
You know, they had to vote for someone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, look, if you speak to some people, I didn't know what I was doing. So imagine the people that voted for me, that is media. And they obviously didn't know what they were doing either.
It's all right. They voted for you, and I'm sure there was a nice little bonus in the contract.
No, there wasn't. That's the stupidity of me. That's unbelievable. You know what's new right now? There's a new hip in Dan Dockage. That's what there's new. I mean, there's a new hip.
Yeah.
I mean, and you are hip.
Well, I needed to be cooler for the kids, so I got a hip replacement. Get it? Bada-ping. I'll be here all day. Yeah, new right hip. Not hepped up on meds. Usually wait till around a nice after dinner, med to kind of get me through the evening. But thank you. Yes, the hip is good. I'm on a couch currently right now with pillows between my legs, my walker out in front of me. But Seth, you and I, we play hurt, babe. We play hurt.
We ain't afraid. Marshmallow. B squared. You ain't. Look, no. B squared. Let's face it. How many of your own teeth do you have right now?
Ooh, they're less and less, babe. Less and less. When you said that, I rubbed my tongue against him like, fake. It's like Elaine on Seinfeld. I got to get into something real quick, all right? And this has nothing to do with teams, nothing to do. It has to do with gambling. The state of Indiana just released their numbers. And the state of Indiana is, just for full disclosure, one of those states that legalized gambling. Now, gambling has always been there. There has always been scandal or the potential of scandal in college basketball. The state of Indiana saw $34.5 million in bets. The state pulled in $813,000 in revenue. Okay, great. All right. Gambling has never been more out in the open, Seth. You turn on shows. Our friend Doug Kazarian does a great show called The Daily Wager. It is no longer taboo. It is no longer Brett Musburger saying some people are staying up late to watch this. It is in our face. It is out in front. So let me ask you this. Let me ask you, do you worry about it on college campuses? Do you worry about it more on college campuses? Because I know you worried about it when you were a coach. We all did. With it being out there, do you as a coach worry about it? Do you address it more, not only with your team, but with your campus, with your fraternities, with your sororities, that type of thing?
I think a university has an obligation to have some type of conversation with their student body. But here's the deal. Boogie's been on campus forever. I mean, let's not fool ourselves.
Right.
Every major university, probably even not even major universities, has some type of bookie on their campus. Someone is running numbers. Someone is running games. Someone is trying to make money. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, it's been that way from the beginning of time since people have been competing. It's been there since the beginning. People used to run numbers. So, like, here's the deal. You've got to educate your team, which you always do. Like, there are certain things that are obviously tremendous fears for coaches, and gambling is at the top of the list. And, you know, it's not this putting up this sign, don't bet on it, you know, and in your locker room, which the NCAA used to make us put up. You know, this poster's got to be put in a prevalent place within your locker room or in your facility. It's more education. And I don't know about you, but I mean, we brought people in every single year. And was it a cover your ass type thing? I don't know if it was. It was one of those, it kind of scared the crap out of me because I cared about the game. I cared about the integrity of the game. I cared about my profession and my family. And, you see what that's done to other people. And I don't think it'll change that much. I do think that, look, gambling's an epidemic. I mean, look, it's wide open. And why is the bear on college game day in football? Real simple. Take games. Why do we have a half hour show? Why do you do a bet of the day, right? In horse racing,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
On your show. You talk about the best games probably.
I never knew the lines, but when I got a radio show, I learned them. And now that it's way out there, I got to know them. It's that simple.
It's part of your job.
Right.
So, I mean, like, it's almost like when you're on the bubble, people say, should you talk about it? Well, look, the kids are talking about it anyway. It's not like you can put your head in the sand and ignore it. So if it's going to be out there, you obviously have to discuss it with your team maybe even a little bit more aggressively now, because it's so much easier for a young person to want to either A, gamble themselves, or B, you know, basically be hit up by a bookie on campus to fix a game. So It's part of our society today.
Let me ask you this. You're coaching in a state that has legalized gambling, New Jersey, Indiana. I think Illinois is coming. I don't think they have it right now. Let's say you're coaching Indiana University and one of your players goes to a sports book. And one of your players, you know, some guy takes a picture of him, sends it to you, says, "Coach, man, use so-and-so. He's betting on the Michigan-Ohio State game." You good with that? It's legal.
I'm not good with that. I just think
what do you
that
do
you're
about
opening
it?
Up a can of worms. Well, obviously, I think the first thing you do is you bring the kid in and you educate him on perception being reality. You educate him on, he walks into a sports book. And, you know, like people say, well, if he walks into a sports book, hell, at least he's wide out in the open. It's better than him working with the bookie on campus, you know, where no one can see him, I guess. But no, I just don't think if you're participating in the sport or in sport, I just think it's a slippery slope to be messing around with, to have one of your players rolling in and out of OTB or I don't know exactly what they call it.
What can you do about it? It's a bad look for a player to go in a liquor store. It's a bad look for a player to be out 2 a.m. at a bar. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but the difference between a liquor store is that like when you're getting guys walking in gambling, well, no matter who he's gambling on, people obviously don't know who he's gambling on. Is what if he's gambling on your team? What if
if he's gambling on the Cubs? You know, totally bet neck. I mean, this is stuff that coaches have to deal with, Seth.
Oh,
right?
It's another thing when people talk about, well, hey, you're just coaching your team. It's another thing. The things that come across your desk during the course of a day, whether it's a parent who's having issues, a family domestic issue, or if it's a family having a financial issue, or if it's a mom that's sick or a grandmother that's sick, or it's, you know, any hundreds of things, a guy that broke up with his girlfriend, a guy that's being intimidated because it's the first time he's in a class with people that are different than him. I mean, it's just another thing that a coach is going to have to now look at and take time to address and monitor. There's so much more, as you know, Dan, there's so much more that impacts how you coach your team and than just basketball. I mean, this is going to be just another thing on your plate.
Yeah, I think it's interesting.
What do you think?
Well, gambling touched us at Bowling Green. Toledo got fixed games, and one of the games they fixed was ours. The kid, Sammy Vajegas, we couldn't understand going into our game why he wasn't very good in the second half of games. And we actually talked about it before the game. We're down 17 at half. We make this comeback, win the game at home. And we find out a couple years later, you know, here we are. I had a kid, and this is what's always scared me about it. I would go on Fridays. If I was going to all the sororities, I'd take my daughter. If I was going to all the fraternities, I'd take my son, and we'd go visit all the fraternities on Sunday night or sororities, whatever. I had a kid raise his hand. He said, "Coach, can you come back every Sunday and tell us how you think you're going to go against the spread in each game this week?" And I went, as I can do, I went off. But that it's there, and your players, you know, they're not going to. No gambler is going to be able to get to LeBron James or an NBA guy making $50 million on a 2-year deal or anything like that. But they certainly can't get the college kids, I guess, as you said, they don't have to anymore. Bookies are still going to be there though, and it is more out in the open. And I would make rules, and I would try to enforce those rules. Purdue University, the president, Mitch Daniels, has put out a thing where basically no faculty members are allowed to bet on college sports. I don't know if that would hold up. I don't know. You know, who knows? But I don't know, Seth. It's an interesting thing.
Look, as a coach, to me, it's real simple. We're not going to indulge in this. I understand that it's tempting. I understand that, you know,
it's fun. It's whatever
it's
you think
fun.
It is.
But here's the deal. This is, we're not going to be part of being part of this team. Our non-negotiables, our core beliefs, all right, to be part of this team, you cannot partake in this. And then there are going to be people say, but they're just athletes. You know, I mean, they're like any other student. There are going to be people that are going to, give you all that rigmarole. That sounds great until you're the head coach or an assistant coach in that locker room with that team on a daily basis. And it's basically, jeopardizing the integrity of your program. All that stuff. And then the people say, well, you know, guys are doing it anyway. Well, you know what? If guys are doing it anyway, eventually they're going to end up betting on their own team. I hate to say that, but I mean, if people is really are indulging in and really, if they're that addicted that they can't go through the season and not gamble, then you know what? There's a chance if they're that addicted or they need the juice that bad, then you know what? There's a good chance they've got some other issues. That's my take.
All right. I think it's an important take in college basketball. Let me get last thing. If I gave you the over-under five years, will we see a point-shaving scandal within 5 years, or would you take under, would you take over? And maybe I'm being too dramatic about this. Maybe I'm being
That's
too
–
maybe I'm being too – but it seems to me this is all out in front, and you know what kids know? Kids know what they see on their screen. Kids know what they see on their social media, and kids know what's out there. To think they don't is ludicrous, and this is out there big time.
Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, we have all these conversations about how valuable the players are and that, you know, with the name and likeness and everything else that's going on in our sport, would a player eventually be more likely to indulge in something like this because of, once again, proving that of their value and that they feel like, you know, like today, you know, there's a segment of society that feels like the players are not getting their fair cut. The players are getting exploited. So if they're getting exploited, then they're going to make their money this way. I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but
no.
is that a common sense kind of, if you did a storyboard on the thing, is that a common sense feeling that, you know, what players feel like they're being exploited, players feel like they're not getting their cut. So you know what? Hey, you know, I'll fix this one game and I'll get mine. Does that make any sense?
It does. The only thing that I would say is that
you can go to jail.
Man, that's what I was going to say. The guys with the badges can come knock on your door, man. We talk about it all the time. It's a lot different when guys with NCAA came on the door, couldn't come knocking on the door, than when guys with FBI come knocking on the door. It's a hell of a difference right there, man. But I think it's a normal. I'm not necessarily sure. Like I have an inherent incredible fear of going to jail. I don't know if a lot of people.
It's probably
do.
Not a good place to be. I mean, yeah, bad hip and all.
Yeah, I don't.
Especially
I don't know
with
if
the
a lot of people do.
The way they are right now,
yeah.
Probably won't be a good jail.
No. All right, let's. You ready to talk some hoops? I'm sorry to bring that in, but I.
I like it. Snoop Dogg last week, gambling this week. We got it all. Come on, this is why this is the world's greatest podcast. I mean,
all right.
Yeah, by the way, we don't just stay in our lane. SEC. Everyone is hyped on Florida. Kerry Blackshear transfers from Virginia Tech. Scott Lewis, the freshman, he's a freak athlete. Trey Mann is another freshman who's, you know, are they a potential Final Four team? Now, last year they played at a snail's pace. They got dudes right now, man.
Last year they didn't like each other. I mean, they got a little bit
better.
Well,
they had the two guys that just didn't fit. Hudson and
your guys.
Keevon Allen, just they didn't fit. So,
no, but
they're the team. They're the hot team right now.
You said this, and I think I've given this a lot of thought as I've gone through college basketball. You said something really – I think it was you last week when we did the show. I said something like, Kerry Blackshear is a great player, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, look, he's a great player. At his size, his ability, he'd have been gone to the NBA. It's true. I did think when Florida got Kerry Blackshear, the big kid from Virginia Tech, who has every skill that you want, I thought that put him over the top until, Seth, you said that. You said that, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, I wonder what's there. Now, that's very unfair to Kerry Blackshear. I wonder what's there because he's never done anything but play on a team. He just hasn't been drafted into the, you know, NBA. But to me, I say, all right, what is there? He's 6'10". He's 250 pounds. He can shoot. He's a little bit like Tim Duncan-ish. I mean, I'm not saying he's Tim Duncan, but he can do a lot of different things. But I thought getting him made them, I don't know. I'm not going to say that Scotty Lewis is great. I mean, I'm not going to say that they were the favorite, but they're in the conversation with the Michigan States of the world, the Kansases of the world, and maybe even the Memphises of the world. I mean, if you want to put them in. But once you said that, Seth, I thought about it. I'm like, going to be very interested. Nembhard, they say he's going to be really good. They say he had a great offseason, the Canadian
great
kids.
Great summer with the Canadian kids. Yeah. Was an assistant on that team.
Really good. Yeah, and he's not a Jet. He's smart. He got better during the year. He not only runs a team, but he can do. Well, basically, he can do what you. You know, who he reminds me of. Is this a wrong comparison? Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah, I got a little Malcolm Brogdon in. Yeah, I mean, he gets the ball exactly where he wants to get it, when he wants to get it. Everyone says it's not quick enough, but he gets where he wants, and he keeps the ball in front. That's pretty good compare. He doesn't shoot like Brogdon yet, I don't think.
No, but, you know, you got a bunch of guys that are going to have to play that really, I mean.
Keontae John.
I was just going to mention him.
Yeah, and he rebounds the ball. Like, they have a good team. Here's the thing that perplexes me. I mean, look, they're going to defend, all right? They're going to force turnovers. I'm not sure if they can shoot it. Now, they should. Trey Mann can really, really shoot the ball. No Rock can shoot the ball, but they should. And then they were 344. I'm not big on analytics, but they got a bunch of athletic, long, rangy guys. They've got to score more easy baskets. Like, to me, you know, I think you've got to figure out a way to score easy baskets.
Let me ask you this. Without a quick point guard, all right, you know, a guy that, you know how point guards are. For me anyway, a point guard was, man, when he's in transition, I'm sitting back because I know something good's going to happen here. We're going to get a layup. We're going to get a kick out. We're going to get something really good. Without having a point guard that's a true quick point guard, is it – I'm going to say this wrong.
How's the guy in the Big Ten that's not a true quick point guard?
You're going to say, yes and no, because when he gets in transition, man, it's a layup. It's the right thing. He's one of those faster than you think guys. I think Nembhard is actually slower than you think. Not that he's slow, but he plays at his pace. Without a quick point guard, can you get an easy bucket consistently?
Yeah, advance pass.
Okay. Do they have guys?
And let your wing guy. Well, yeah, Sky Lewis.
Do they have guys that can go to dribble, lay it in?
Yeah, I think they got a bunch of them. Sky Lewis and Trey Mann, and Mann can play some point, which he's a little quicker point guard. You know, Noah Locke can really shoot the ball. Yeah, they're interesting because, like, every league has a team that everyone is excited about. Speaking of Mike White, I've got their Connecticut game in beautiful Storrs, Connecticut, on campus, and I'm excited to see them play. I am. I'm going to visit with Mike White tomorrow at SEC Media Day, and I'm excited to see how good Florida is. Let me ask you, Auburn, they lose all those dudes. Can Bruce Pearl? I mean, and they're still involved in this FBI thing, but can he wave the magic wand and keep it going? I mean, they do have some dudes back now. I mean, like, I mean, they've got, you know, they lose Brown and they lose Harper and they lose Chume Okeke, but they, you know, they've got Dowdy back and they've got Cormick back and they've got, you know, they've got bodies back. Okoro, they're saying, I mean, I spoke to Bruce the other day, and he tells me this kid, Isaac Okoro, is really, really good. Kind of runs him up, a poor man's Tobias Harris. You know, Austin Wiley, Dangelo Purifoy. I mean, how good can they be? They force turnovers, right? They shoot a zillion threes. I mean,
history tells me they're going to be very good, and it's just, truthfully, in my world, it's just because of Bruce Pearl. You mentioned it to start with. Brown and Harper gone. Now, let's think about that for just a second, man. Ooh. I mean, when you think of that team last year, Brown and Harper, I think, I'm not going to say they did everything, but they did a hell of a lot. I mean, they, you know, and they arguably the most clutch three free throws in NCAA history. Ramel Robinson. I'll go back to Bobby Slick Leonard making two for the win in 1950 because I'm old and I'm an Indiana historian. And
you don't get that everywhere.
No, you don't. And, you know, Kyle Guy stood up there and made three free throws. But I would argue that Bruce Pearl, if you go back over the course of his career, he's won everywhere. I'm just saying. I mean, you can almost break it down as simple as that. If Urban Meyer's the Indiana Indiana football is going to be pretty good. I mean, I just feel that way, and I feel that way about Bruce.
I think you should take SC first, though.
Yeah, we're going to SC. Yeah, we are. Need to have him on the show.
I agree with that. Let me give you another one. Four new coaches in the league. Nate Oates, Buzz Williams, Eric Musselman, Jerry Stackhouse. Nate Oates, obviously Buffalo, 3 out of 4 years NCAA tournament. Play crazy fast, inherit a pretty good backcourt. And Kyron Lewis, who's now 18 years old. He was 17 last year. Obviously, Eddie can really shoot it at home. Didn't shoot it as well on the road. Buzz Williams, they return like 70%+ of their scoring at A&M. Eric Musselman, I mean, I think Isaiah Joe, the kid at Arkansas – is as good a shooter as it is in college basketball. And then Jerry Stackhouse obviously has a rebuild. Of those four guys, which team do you think is going to have the greatest impact?
Well, I'm going to say the least impact.
And then maybe moving forward.
I got to believe that Stackhouse's thing is tough, okay? And a little bit of it isn't – it's not going to be his fault. I mean, he's taken over a situation that obviously went awry for Bryce Drew, but he's also taken over a weird situation, Seth. They got basketball underneath the umbrella of rec sports. They got a weird – what's the right way to put it? A weird athletic department – yeah, weird structure there, and Stackhouse is friends with the AD. And look, I'm all in. If NBA guys come in and they can recruit and they can coach, then good for them. I don't care who's coaching. And I like Jerry Stackhouse. I don't know him. I liked him as a player, so good for him. But I think that one's the toughest. I'll go with Nate Oates. Here's the thing that I would say about Nate Oates. When I watched his Buffalo teams, you mentioned playing fast and all that. You know what I thought they were? I thought they were really well evaluated. I thought he really did a good job of getting kids maybe that nobody wanted, I don't know, but he got the right kids for the way he plays. And I think John Beilein has taught a lot of people, if you're not going to be K or you're not going to be Cal or you're not going to be in the top five every year in recruiting, the evaluation of players is the most important thing. Beilein showed that in a multitude of ways over his career, and that's kind of how I feel about Nate Oates. I feel Nate Oates has a good system, but hell, everybody's system in college hoops is damn near the same. I feel like Nate Oates can really coach. I feel he holds people accountable. But more than anything, I think, because that Mac is a mother now, it's almost like everybody fights over kids from Ohio in that area. He went and found guys, was able to get them into Buffalo, and they were able to succeed at a level that maybe they hadn't succeeded before. So I'm kind of into Nate Oates here, brother. I am. How about you?
Well, it's interesting because I think pretty much the whole first, let's hit Jerry Stackhouse. Jerry Stackhouse, everyone I talk to in the NBA says he's not a good coach. He's a really, really good coach, a good communicator.
There you go.
And, he was a great guy. Now, he's got a smaller pool of guys to recruit, which will be interesting. Look, Nate Oates, Buzz Williams, Eric Musselman, you and I talk about this all the time. Evaluating is as important part of recruiting as actually signing players. So you got to know who can play for the head coach, who can play for you, who can fit your system, who's going to kind of be the guy you kind of want. Those three guys, you're talking about getting old and staying old. Eric Musselman gets old because he recruits a lot of transfers. I mean, he got Jimmy Witt back. I mean, Jimmy Witt started in Arkansas, went to SMU, now he's coming back to Arkansas. All four just really interesting guys. Nate Oates has no connections to the South, a Michigan guy. At Alabama, he got Beetle Bolden. Beetle Bolden doesn't get me excited. I don't think he'd win with Beetle Bolden, but I do think that, Alabama is a fertile recruiting area. I mean, is he going to be Bruce Pearl for guys that he wants? Because Bruce is going to recruit similar type guys. I don't know, but he's proven he's a good coach. Buzz Williams will go undersized. He'll go quick. He's a Texas guy. He will have the greatest in-state recruiting impact of them all because A&M is an animal and he's found a model that fits. And that model is hard playing guys, good point guard, spread to court, hybrid fours, the Jay Crowders, the undersized hard playing dudes, and lets his guards play. He's a good hire. He kind of left Tech kind of high and dry, but he's a good hire and he'll do a good job. Eric Musselman is going to be unique, and because he'll be the Fred Hoiberg of the SEC, but there are also players in Arkansas that he's going to be able to recruit. I think that all these guys are good hires. I think in this moment in time, Buzz Williams can talk about how the program's in disarray, but he returned 70% of the scoring. They're better than people think. Eric Musselman has a good backcourt. Jones, Joe, Witt, those are three guys that have proven to be successful in college. And then Nate Oates, with Petty and Lewis, those three of those four teams will be in a conversation for the NCAA tournament. And I do like Arkansas because I'll tell you, Reggie Chaney, to compliment Mason Jones and Witt and Isaiah Joe, that's a pretty good group. They return 77% of their minutes and 88% of their 3 points. They've got a good team, Arkansas. So I think this league is really deep. Like Ole Miss, Kermit Davis has got a good team.
They're hard to play against.
Oh,
they're really hard. Yeah.
He's a good coach.
Seth, I'll go back to something that you said about Jerry Stackhouse. And people want to pigeonhole coaches. Like, I didn't care that Penny Hardaway came to Memphis. I just didn't like the way Tubby Smith was handled. I didn't think he should have been handled that way.
100%.
Yeah. And he and I watched Memphis. I think they're very good. I had a chance to talk to Juwan Howard, and there's no question in my mind. Now, if Juwan Howard doesn't get it done, it's not going to be because he's not smart enough, he's not tough enough, he's not good enough. Bad breaks will hurt Juwan Howard if it doesn't happen, because he's a very good guy, has a great plan, and, you know, away you go. And to your point, Stackhouse, guys coming in after playing without college coaching experience, does it, one, give them an unbelievably great advantage, name recognition, closeness to players? Does it, two, eventually come back to bite them as water finds its level, and next thing you know what, these other guys have been doing this a lot longer? What do you think?
I have a very strong opinion on this, because here's the deal. The guy that just wants to go back to his alma mater to coach is one thing, because he wants to make $2 million and come back and be the hero going back. Juwan Howard, Penny Hardaway, guys like that. Look, I mean, those guys, like, let's use Juwan Howard as an example. He worked for Pat Riley for how many years?
Right.
I mean, he survived Pat Riley for how many years? I mean, that guy obviously is a guy that was committed to coaching, to learning the profession. Now, he'll need some help. All these guys eventually need someone that understands the business of college basketball, which is a little bit different. But in terms of, like, Juwan Howard's going to work. Pat Ewing, all right? He worked with the Van Gundys. He worked for Mike Fratello. I mean, those guys, people don't understand. Everyone goes, well, NBA assistants, they really don't do anything. I know they do a lot. And they study the game, and they understand player relations, and they understand the game, and they can teach the game, and they've done 8 gazillion scouting reports, and they've done 4,000 game plans, and they've watched hours and hours of film. And if they have a work ethic, and a lot of these guys have networks because they're involved in grassroots basketball through their children or through their own organizations and foundations. I mean, Penny Hardaway. I mean, look, he paid that dude. Coached high school, coached AAU. You know, he didn't have to. He's got a gazillionaire. He's got a little penny running around all over the place. He's got his own shoe. I mean, why is a guy that's making that much money messing around coaching high school and coaching grassroots basketball? Because, you know, he's in love with the game and he wants to do something special. So I look at Juwan. I look at Jerry Stackhouse. And these guys weren't handed anything in the coaching profession. They were committed to being coaches. And they pursued it. I mean, coaching in the G League is not fun. Jerry Stackhouse had great success. That's not glamorous. That's off the beaten path. I respect guys like that. It's the guys that just think, well, I went to that school. I should become the head coach. That's a joke. End of conversation.
I knew you had a strong opinion on that. I knew.
I know, hey, you just poked the bear on that one. That's all you did. I'm going to get back to Ole Miss.
I'm not letting us, guys. Well, I was going to say, I'm not letting us get out of the SEC without talking about Kentucky.
Yeah, but let's do one thing about Ole Miss. Just remember this. KJ Buffin and Blake Henson, they will complement Breann Terry-Reed, who averages like 20 points a game or 19 points a game or 18 points a game. But those two forwards will be really, really good. Now we will talk about – let's talk about LSU before Kentucky. I have a hard time talking about LSU. I've got to be honest with you. I like their team. I love Skylar Mays. I think he's such a terrific competitor. He understands how to play. He makes winning plays. Emmett Williams can rebound. And Javonte Smart is tough. They get Trendon Watford. I don't know how he gets out of Alabama, but I guess that's what happens. You get out of Alabama to go to LSU. That's things, you know, stuff happens.
What are you saying there?
I just don't know. I don't know how a guy leaves Alabama to go to LSU.
He had a better opportunity.
He had a team that went
to
the Final Four. I mean, right in his own state. But what do I know?
Maybe he thought he had a better opportunity to play. Maybe they had a better business school. Maybe he had a better time on a visit.
You convinced me.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Well, LSU's still going to be good. I'll tell you that much.
Will he be coaching by the end of the year? We'll wait.
Yeah, because I don't think they haven't even gotten to the point where they've gotten their letter of inquiry.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. Right. By the way, Rick Barnes, I was with him yesterday. He thinks they're going to be really good.
He thinks LSU's going to be really good or Tennessee?
No, he thinks Tennessee's going to be really good.
Josiah Jordan James,
he's got Lamonte Turner, he's got Bowden, he's got some young big guys. He's got, obviously, Faulkner's back. He thinks Ponce is going to be better. He thinks they're going to be much better than people think.
Do you
Let's talk about Kentucky. What's that?
Well, I mean, they lost so much. I mean, and it seemed to me they're one of those teams that not only did they lose what you see on the court, but they lost what you want off the court, seemed like to me, you know, Schofield, Williams, those guys. I feel like when you look at a team that lost its soul, would that be safe to say, and maturity and everything else? That's Tennessee basketball to me. Those kids were awesome, I felt like.
I agree. But I do think they have a culture, and I think they do have pretty good guards and experience, more experience than people think. Your school has experience? Kentucky.
Shocking.
Four guys. What do you think?
If you were going to say Kentucky and you were going to say first player comes to your mind on this particular Kentucky team, mine's Ashton Hagans.
Yes.
Is that Nick
Richards?
Nick Richards and I have a history. Richards. He's my guy. It's Ashton Hagans because I think Ashton Hagans. He reminds me a bit of Teague. Now, I know Teague didn't make it in the NBA, but Teague was a terrific college player, won a national championship. I understand he had Anthony Davis with him. But Hagans reminds me of the Rondo / Teague kind of long defender, I don't think he's got a ego. I just think he kind of does everything that you want out of a point guard to win a game. It's kind of how I look at him. And hey, look, Nick Richards going to have to play, isn't he? He's going to have to do something.
EJ Montgomery, big one too now. And EJ Montgomery as a sophomore, you know, could he have a PJ Washington type year? I don't know if it's in his personality to have that kind of jump. But I think that EJ Montgomery, left-handed, can step out and shoot it. A little Torian Prince in him maybe.
What I'm going to give you for E.J. Montgomery? And this is going way back. I'm giving you Sam Perkins.
Sam Perkins.
The big smooth. I really thought, and I don't know how you felt or whether Cal felt this way, but I felt like E.J. Montgomery, given he didn't have great stats, I felt like he may have been gone to the NBA. That's how people view him.
Yeah, I mean, there was a little risk. I mean, I was over there pro day the other day. I mean, look, he's got to shoot it more consistently.
Who's their best pro prospect based on their pro day?
Tyrese Maxey.
Really?
That dude is, he's really good. I'll tell you one thing. Tyrese Maxey and Ashton Hagans, you and I would not get the ball over half court.
I'm a 57-year-old bald fat man. I wouldn't think I would get off. I don't think I'd get a ball over half court to you. I think we'd sit down and have a sandwich and a Tito's before we worried about getting the ball down to half court.
Those two dudes, absolutely flat. They don't defend. They disrupt. They absolutely just get up and under you and hand pressure, great feet, aggressive. Tyrese Maxey is really good. He's got a little Derrick Rose in him. He's got a burst. He can finish. The greatest thing about this kid, I'm just telling you, I was there for 2.5 days. The joy and the smile. His smile is contagious. Like I said, why are you so unhappy? I was joking. I said, Tyrese, why are you so unhappy? He goes, Coach, I'm never unhappy. I'm never unhappy. Why would I be unhappy? Look where I am. I'm in the gym. I love basketball. I mean, was so refreshing. And they could put a backcourt of quickly Hagans and Tyrese Maxey. They could go big. They could go small. Nate Sestina, the kid who transferred from Bucknell, can step out and shoot the three. And
you love
John
him,
will
don't
figure
you?
Out how to use. Yeah, you know what? He's different. I mean, John's going to have to. You know, he's going to have to toss you. Like when they run all that baseline runner, they're going to have to kind of curl and wrap him and pop them and let him step out and shoot it. They're going to have to run like all kinds of little drag screens and roll one guy and just pop him. He gets it off quick, and every time he shoots it, you think it's going in. And he's a better athlete. Like he's a better athlete than Reed Travis. How's that one for you? Now people won't see me that way. He's a bouncy.
Reed Travis was a lot of things, but Reed Travis was a disappointing athlete to me.
It wasn't. He was a slow twitch fiber guy, but what a great kid. He might be the guy that might have been like an amazingly nice human being.
Yeah, I felt bad even saying that. I take that back. The world will come back. Karma will get me for saying anything bad about Reed Travis because
he's an amazing
the best kid ever. You're right about that. No, you're right. So are they national championship good?
You know what? Yeah, because I've seen a lot of practice. I got Maryland today. I got your boy Travis Steele tomorrow. I'm going to see Xavier tomorrow. You know what? Excluding Kansas, that just jumps out at me. I like Kansas's talent and experience. Dotson and Azubuki and Abaji, and I mean, now they get Sosa back. I mean, they jump out at me. Yeah, I think Kentucky will be in the conversation because I think in the end that backcourt's going to be just hellacious, and the kid Brooks is going to be a good player. He's getting better. He's just young. Yeah, they'll be in the conversation. Look, Kentucky's Kentucky. I mean, they're going to be very, very tough to deal with on the defensive end. And I think they'll be able to shoot it a little bit better than people think. Let me ask one guy we didn't talk about, your guy, the Kreener.
Oh, boy.
Here's the question. Hey, they got dudes. I mean, Anthony Edwards, will they stop turning it over, and will they guard? That's going to be a challenge. I mean, don't you think those are two things?
Well, I feel like this. I feel like, and this is my hope for Tom, I hope Tom settles into who he is as a coach, because at Indiana, he was always trying to, I feel like play meant recruit, meaning we're going to play so fast because we want to get the best players to see us playing fast. And, you know, we're going to try to be the highest, whatever analytic that Tom brought out for this particular day. My hope is he settles into toughness on defense, handling the basketball and getting good shots. Because quite frankly, that's who Tom used to be as a coach. That, in my opinion, his Marquette's teams, that going back to him with Izzo, to me, that's who he was. And I think the bigness, it's Indiana, blah, 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 made him more of a recruit playing. How do I put this right? A recruiting coach, even on the court during games. We're trying to show you a style as opposed to, hey, look, we got to win this freaking game and we got to do it the way we do it. So my answer is yes. I think Tom studies coaching. I think Tom studies himself. I think he has people around him that study. So I'm going to say you're going to see a much better fundamental in what you said, defensive. I think you're going to look at their field goal percentage. Defense will be better. I think their points allowed will be down, and I think their turnovers will be down immeasurably this year. That's what I think. Do I know?
Yeah.
Hell no.
Like my thing is, Tom's such a great job in player development. Obviously, he likes look at Bryant. That's who is he with the Wizards now? Or
yeah, he's with the Wizards. I mean, $25 million.
Yeah, $25 million. I mean, and you look at these guys. You know, he's always had those bigs who step out and shoot and handle the ball, and that's why their turnover numbers are up. Let's face it. I mean, like instead of saying, "All right, let's put these guys in position," I think you can have player development and also put guys in position to play to their strengths while they're working on their weaknesses. Instead of saying, "Well, you know, we're positionless," and it's everyone wants to be positionless this, positionless that. You know, look, our bigs handle the ball. We're getting our guy. And look, you have to get guys ready for the NBA, and that's a big part of recruiting. But you got to win games.
Defensively,
you don't have to guard balls. And this is just all coaches. You don't have to guard ball screen 17,000 ways. You know, down it and blitz it or whatever, or down it and hedge it. Find two ways to guard it so you have an adjustment. You know, I mean, like you don't have to run, and I was bad with this, 8,000 different plays to get the ball to the same spot. Where do your best players – Cal's the best at this. Where do your best players want the ball? Figure out one or two ways to get your best players the ball in the spot they want to get the ball and get out of their way. Score easy baskets. Play ahead of the defense. I mean, and I just think it – because Tom is a terrific coach, and he studies the game to the point where it's almost – he's almost too prepared. It's almost like when I first started
– It's counterproductive
sometimes. Yeah, like sometimes don't you when you get prepared for a game – You have so much information on the team you're preparing for that you try to get it all in and you're over prepared, and then instead of just reacting to the game. And I think, you know, I'd love to see Tom just take what he wants to do and say, right, this is who we are and this is how we win and this is what we're going to do. And then look, Anthony Edwards is really, really good. I mean, they've got a very good freshman class, and the kid he got from Northeastern, the Gresham kid, is a point guard that can, low turnover, high basketball IQ guy that will help them. I think Georgia will be a lot better than people think, and they'll be a fun team to watch for sure.
Yeah, I do too.
That's some magic right there. That's some magic right there in the SEC.
I don't know how anybody anywhere anytime can break down a league any better than we just did. You want to go to questions? What would you like to do?
Yeah, let's go to questions. I think, you know, you have to take your meds and then, you know, maybe have a bowel movement or two. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, jeez.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right. The great Seth Greenberg. I'm going to ask you this, although I think I got a little answer for this. Richard Schumacher says, using the hashtag student section, which Big Ten team is going to be surprisingly good, and which team will be surprisingly bad this year?
Ooh, wait, I got to let you go first on that one, B-Square, because you are. I mean, first of all, I do not like to put you in the Big Ten.
That's all right. That's all right.
Field, but I would say Maryland is going to be, I don't know, surprisingly good. I think Maryland's going to be very good. I don't think that's surprising at all. But, I think they'll be really good.
I'm going to say Indiana. I have a $1,000 bet. I bet at a Purdue alum. I will give $1,000 to the Tyler Trent Fund at Purdue University if Indiana finishes 10th or below. And a Purdue grad is giving it to, I forget the name of the scholarship that somebody hit me with that we're going to do, if Indiana is 10th to 14th. If Indiana's 10th to 14th, I got to pay Purdue. If Indiana is above 10th, 9th and above, then Purdue's got to pay me. I think Indiana is going to be surprisingly good. Surprisingly bad. I'm not going to say it's going to surprise me, but I'm not sure Wisconsin's going to be where they're at. Now, look, they got better at the end of the year. Micah Potter, the transfer, big kid, prototypical shoot outside, did not get a waiver, so he's not playing. I think Wisconsin will be okay, but I do think this. I do think the Big Ten is the land of the great unknowns. I could also see Illinois being a surprisingly good team. Darren Dawson, Seth Greenberg.
Let me give you one thing on that. I think Ohio State is going to be much better than people think. I know, so I have to get a junior mention because I mean we have an insider, but I just think Chris is really, really good. I think their backcourt's gotten a little bit more mature. You said that the freshman guard is absolutely terrific. He's from your sources.
My sources say that DJ Carton is not good. Great. Didn't get off to the greatest start at Ohio State, matured over the summer, which is why you're there in the summer, quite frankly, and is a one-and-done type talent. We shall see, but I'm with you on Ohio State.
Alonzo Gaffney, really good. I worry about Iowa. Momentum.
That's the thing, Seth. Iowa, me too. Weisskamp, really good. Bohannon, not in there.
I love Weisskamp.
Yeah, but all right, Rutgers, if they're good, is that surprisingly good? I think it might be. Ron Harper Jr., Geo Baker. I mean, I don't know, but that's what
you're
saying.
You're big on the Scarlet Knights. You are big.
I'm big.
You're big on Pikel.
I'm big on Steve Pikel. Big. Let's go to Coach K. You'll have an answer for this. Ready? Darren Dawson at Sen by DSD89 says on Twitter, does Coach K have many years left? And after he calls it quit, who takes over and how relevant is Duke after Coach K? Seth Greenberg, two-time ACC coach of the year.
Here's the deal with Coach K. Coach K is not going anywhere. His grandson is a freshman, so he's going to be there for four more years.
All right.
That's just the way it is. I mean, his grandson's there. He's not leaving while his grandson is enrolled in school. That's my thing.
Maybe he doesn't like his grandson.
Different. That he loves his grandson. So, okay. I mean, my sources tell me there's no way he's going anywhere. And he doesn't have any other hobbies. And look.
I thought he was a big gardener.
Oh, stop. And he's got, I mean, look, the guy that has less hair than, I don't have a lot of hair, but I have some gray hairs. He has less gray hair than me.
He has no gray hairs.
No gray hairs.
I'm very jealous. All right, so who takes over after he's done in 6 years?
I think that's fluid. I mean, 6 years is a long time. I mean, there'll be people that will emerge. I mean, you know, who would want to follow him? I think the guy that would not be afraid to follow him is Capel. He's got to win some games.
You got to be good enough. I know who else wouldn't be afraid to follow him, and 6 years is a long time, Brad Stevens. I know we all think it's going to be in the family, and maybe it is, but I know he's not really afraid. All right, Seth Greenberg, for you, Hobson Elite Basketball. A couple Big Ten decommitments took place. What's the BTS recruiting strategy for coaches when a player you expected decommits from your program?
Yeah, I mean, that's the hardest thing about getting early commitments. Is it a soft commitment? Like college basketball is getting like football. Like, you know, when someone makes a commitment to football, you know what that means? Everyone knows who they have to be.
Yeah, no question.
And they just know who they have to be. I mean, that's just the way it is. The hardest thing is when a guy decommits and then commits to someone else in your league. That's like the double whammy. Because, you know, not only is he not coming to you, but now you have to play against the guy, which creates obviously a very difficult scenario. I think that it goes back to, and it sounds crazy, and we see the FBI investigations and all this and all that. Here's the deal. You better have someone in the room where it happens. Because in the room where it happens, if someone's not working for you, they are working against you. So if the guy that has the biggest voice in the room where it happens isn't happy with that young player's decision, that is a soft commitment. Because eventually, in the room where it happens, that guy kills you. End of conversation, drop the mic.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. The mic has been dropped by Seth Greenberg, signaling the end of the world's greatest podcast. That's how good that answer was. And, oh, by the way, those of you that are going to, in the basketball season, complain about the officiating, just think of what's going on in the NFL right now. Sad. Sad, sad, sad. And, oh, by the way, also, Russell Wilson is the MVP of the league right now. Just book it. Go to Vegas. You are welcome.
Book it. Go to Vegas as long as you're not a college athlete who's playing for someone.
Yeah. Hey, wait a second. Actually, you don't even have to go to Vegas. Go to downtown Indy. What the hell? The Winner's Circle. They got it. They'll take your action.
You're unbelievable. D-Squared, that was as good as it gets. But you know what? Please, please, please. After listening to World's Greatest Podcast, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you rate your podcast and make sure you give us the highest rating humanly possible, because that's what we deserve. One great thing about Courtside, we'll be back right at you in the next week. We're going to start to have some guests as we get ready for the season. We'll also be talking about the Big 12 next week.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.